Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm Nabil Biyayo on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Monday, December 4th, 2023. The United Nations Security Council has terminated the UN mission in Sudan known as UNITAMS.
War broke down and then the government decided to call an opportunity to get rid of the mission. So they asked the UN to terminate it, and the council terminated.
And CAM returns to Abyei following weekend clashes that displaced hundreds.
Our forces were deployed at Gafai were dispatched by the directives of the new governor, His Excellency Muammar. And the attack was de-escalated and disputes by the forces from Warabi State.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. First, we have a couple of stories from Sudan where the United Nations Security Council voted on Friday and adopted a resolution that terminated the mandate of the UN Integrated Transitional Assistance Mission in Sudan, known as UNITAMS, which was established in 2020 to assist Sudan in its transition to democracy. The vote comes as Sudan is embroiled in a brutal conflict that has claimed tens of thousands of lives and displaced millions, according to the United Nations. I spoke with Dr. Salman Mohamed Salman, a Sudanese political analyst and chairman of the University of Khartoum Council, who says the move was expected.
I'm not surprised. I don't think the timing was really an issue. From day one, there was no cooperation from the government of Sudan. There was no cooperation whatsoever from the government of Sudan. And this fact prompted the national coordinator, as you know, the UNITAMS has the UN appointed coordinator, and then the government of Sudan was supposed to appoint a national coordinator so that he could be the link between them and the government. And they did appoint a very well respected ambassador. His name is Omar Al-Sheikh, and from day one, I knew him and I talked to him many times. From day one, he said that the government was putting every element of obstacle. They just don't want to cooperate. And he said it's not just a question of inactive cooperation. It's just meetings are canceled. Offices for the Sudanese counterpart were not provided. So it hasn't really been easy. But the mission tried, and finally, the war broke down, and then the government decided to call an opportunity to get rid of the mission. So they asked the UN to terminate it, and the council terminated. It hasn't really been ineffective because of lack of cooperation from the government side,
and especially after the coup, the 2021 coup, when it became a military government now. And General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan accused the head of the UN mission of interfering in Sudanese affairs, and he was declared persona non grata. He couldn't come back to the country. So you're saying the termination did not come to you as a surprise. It was expected.
No, I don't think it should come to a surprise to anyone. And you just added this historical element about declaring the coordinator as a persona non grata, and it was just a culmination. I mean, if the mission main purpose is to help Sudan transition to democracy, and then you have a coup, and you have led by the very same group that was sharing the government, was in partnership with the government, and then you have the war. So there is really no point in talking about promotion to democracy or moving to democracy, because the country is really in a complete mess, and it's basically de facto divided between the two warring generals.
People like the former Prime Minister, Abdullah Hamdok, he lamented the decision. He actually wrote a statement saying this is a time when Sudan needs UNITAMS more than ever, and we need to strengthen it, especially the element of protection of civilians. And other observers have made this observation. So what do you think? Now Sudan is at war. Going to make things worse? You say the mission was not effective to begin with, but does it, the termination make things worse?
Let me roll back a little bit on the comment of Dr. Abdullah Hamdok, the former prime minister. I understand his disappointment, because the idea of the UNITAMS came from him. He wrote a letter to the Security Council asking for the mission and outlining what help it can provide, and so it is his baby. And now that he wanted to be there so it could be a witness to what is going on and report regularly to the to the Security Council on what is going on, so that the facts are coming from the UN itself, not from reporters or not from government officials or from anyone. So I understand his frustrations, actually. It would go more than disappointment. That's why he wrote the letter, hoping it would stay, because it was his baby. But as I said, Dr. Hamdok himself knows very well that even during his premiership, when he was prime minister, the mission wasn't really, there was no cooperation. The government was not cooperating. The security, the military element was just putting every piece of obstacle in front of the mission's work. So he was hoping that it would help. I'm not sure it can help. I mean, it can only help with the report, but with reporting what's going on. Now we have something smaller and something probably a replacement, the appointment of the special envoy, Mr. Ramantil Lamamra,
yes.
The Algerian diplomat. So the observation of Dr. Hamdok, on which he based his request, can now be carried out by Lamamra. He's there. The reporters are there. The world is not that the world is becoming very small. I mean, with satellite, everybody knows what's going on everywhere. There are a number of NGOs working on the ground, which they provide. Videos are being sent right and left about what is going on. So, as I said earlier, the mission wasn't really carrying any job.
That's Salman Mohammed Salman, a political analyst and chairman of the University of Khartoum Council. He spoke with me from the U.S. state of Virginia outside Washington, D.C. this past hour. It's still on Sudan. The country's almost 8-month-long conflict between the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces has had a devastating impact on children. Save the Children reports that more than 2.5 million children have been displaced by the ongoing fighting, with millions more affected. I spoke with Osman Adam Abdul Karim, the head of child protection at Save the Children, who provided insights into the plight of Sudanese children amidst the current conflict.
The crisis that started in April 15th, it's affecting the whole country, particularly Khartoum and Darfur states, as well as some Kurdistan states. Up to now, there is 3.4 million civilians displaced since April. Out of that, 14 million children are being affected in general. So in terms of number of children, more than 2.5 million children are displaced. About 30 to 50 million children are becoming like unaccompanied or separated, away or living by either part of the family or just taking care of other people.
And with Sudan now facing the world's largest child displacement crisis, what challenges does Save the Children encounter in providing assistance to these children?
Save the Children is providing a multi-sectoral response across in 14 states out of 18. At that point, we provide mobile health facilities, we provide cash for multi-purpose cash assistance for the families who are very vulnerable, and we provide psychosocial support through child protection interventions, as well as providing wash services in some of the gathering sites where we manage to operate Besides the health, also we provide nutrition services to those who are malnourished children under 5. And that has helped us to respond to at least 250,000 people, including children, up to date since the conflict started.
In the context of this brutal conflict that has been going on for over 7 months now, a lot of aid organizations are struggling with the issue of access. Tell me about that, you know, and other challenges you face when you're trying to help children. Are they easy to access?
Actually, it's very difficult to access some of the areas, and even the roads are being cut. It's very affecting. This is also affecting the supply chain systems, right? When we do procurements and suppliers, they are even sometimes hesitant to accept some of the offers because of the access, and they are not sure that they can deliver what they requested to. Benefiting also from some of our satellite offices. Besides the main offices, we sometimes have satellite offices like in Jebel Marra and also in South Kulufan, where the SPLM North, the Sudan Liberation Movement Army, is in North, in Kauda. We have offices there, and we managed to continue to provide support, like the Kumu office in South Kulufan is receiving support from South Sudan. And we depend on some of intermediary actors to transfer their cash to our other offices in central Jebel Marra, which is like an area cut off from accessing to either north or central or south Darfur. But we still deliver some support to the people who are displaced in those areas. In the other side of the country, we have from Red Sea going to Gadari, Jinzura, Tindara, and Lumai. We have offices in all these, as well as in north-south Kudufan and White Nile. We manage to have access. And we also work with partners in Khartoum. We have a partner who are delivering some activities in Khartoum in this also critical time.
And finally, looking ahead, what are your priorities and strategies for addressing the ongoing child displacement crisis in Sudan? And how can individuals and organizations contribute to these efforts?
We try as much to work with the actors, like child protection actors, and also the other agencies to provide the required support. And we also work to strengthen the coordination between ourselves. We are also doing the work closely with the government to ensure we deliver. We have a strong also business development team who raise funds to respond to the need. Up to date, from the humanitarian appeal, the result in only 38% that raised by the HIV is responded to. So there is still a big gap, but we continue to access the our traditional donors and communities others to provide them support.
That's Osman Adam Abdul Karim, the head of child protection at Save the Children. He spoke with me from the Sudanese town of Damazin in Blue Nile State. From Sudan, we move to the contested border region of Abyei, where the Abyei administrative area, where authorities say calm has returned to the area following deadly attacks over the weekend by armed young men suspected of coming from South Sudan's Warab state. Officials say hundreds of people have been displaced from their homes in the disputed region. Charlton Doke reports for VOA from Juba.
Authorities in both the disputed Abyei Special Administrative Area and Warab State say 4 people were killed and 18 others wounded on both sides following clashes between armed youths over the weekend. Abyei Special Administrative Area Information Minister Bolis Koch Aguar says gunmen suspected of coming from neighboring Warab State first attacked Saturday, then returned on Sunday, attacking several more villages.
The incident started yesterday morning at 5 a.m. when a group of armed youth from Warab State, who joined with some armed militias, attacked 3 locations in Abyei. The first place they attacked is called Dualjok in Rumamir County. Another place is Mayom Ngok, also in Rumamir County. and the third place they attacked is called Wuntre along the highway. We have had 2 people killed and 8 injured. 2 people are in a critical condition as one person became anemic due to loss of blood and the other one underwent an operation.
Aguar says some 80 families have been displaced from their homes in the affected locations. William Wall, the Warrap State Information Minister, says he is aware of yesterday's incident but denied youths from his area attacked villages in Abyei. Wall claims the clashes started when young men from Warrap State intercepted armed young men from Abyei who were attempting to attack Warrap State's Twitch County.
The clashes happened and there were a fallback to a place called Dualjok. And in Dualjok, both youth from Abyei and from Twitch reinforced themselves. Heavy clashes happened whereby our forces who were deployed at Jakwaj were dispatched by the directives of the new governor, His Excellency Kwal Moarmuar, and the attack was de-escalated and diffused by the forces from Warrap State. And of course, in the incident, we from Warrap State, 2 people confirmed dead and 10 people wounded.
Abyei officials say relative calm has returned to the area. Last week, the Abyei Civil Society Organization accused the UN Interim Security Force for Abyei, or UNISFA, of failing to protect Ngok Dinka civilians in Abyei from attacks by armed civilians from Twitch County, as well as members of the South Sudan People's Defense Forces. The group said the security situation in the disputed region has deteriorated over the past 2 years, with South Sudan Army soldiers carrying out attacks in Abyei, killing dozens of people, and UNISFA doing nothing to stop them. In March this year, UNISFA spokesperson Daniel Adekera confirmed to VOA that forces from South Sudan and Sudan are still present within the Abyei box, violating the 2011 agreement between Sudan and South Sudan. Arop Ajong, chairperson of the steering committee of the Abyei Civil Society Organization, says his group now wants the UN Security Council to ensure UNISFA demilitarizes the Abyei box.
And then we need UN Security to put maximum pressure on UNISFA to adhere their mandate in Abyei box. Again, we urge the Security Council and Troika on African Union panel to implement the withdrawal of forces from Abyei.
VOA reached out to Adekera and Antoinette Midey, the UNISFA public information officer, last week for comment on the issues raised by the Abyei Civil Society Organization without success. Neither Adekera nor Midey immediately responded to emails or WhatsApp messages. Both Sudan and South Sudan claim ownership of Abyei, whose management has been placed under the presidents of Sudan and South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, the parliament and government in Guinea-Bissau have been dissolved. Stay tuned for details.
Around the world, people are marking the United Nations 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. Help us mark the work to end violence against women by sharing your thoughts on VOA's English to Africa radio programs. Send a voice message or a text to this WhatsApp number, +1 202 258 3076. Before December 10th, tell us what is being done in your community to fight gender-based violence and tell us why this issue is important to you. That number again is +1 202 258 3076.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. A leader of Ethiopian refugees sheltering at the Gorom refugee camp on the outskirts of Juba says he wants to thank South Sudanese authorities for giving home to refugees from Ethiopia. Adu Para Awiti says refugees at the camp still lack basic services, including enough clean water points, health care and education. He tells South Sudan in Focus managing editor John Tanza that the large influx of Sudanese refugees to Gorom has affected the delivery of services.
We're actually very grateful that South Sudan has opened the doors for refugees and asylum seekers so that we can be able to be accommodated here within South Sudan, particularly Juba Gorom camp.
What are the problems facing you here? What are the challenges at this refugee camp?
Well, challenges, basically, they are all about the services. Before the arrival of our brothers from Sudan, we have been having challenges here within. Especially the services that are being offered here, we have been sharing some of the services with the host community. For example, the clinic, the water sources, at the school, which actually are not enough for the children within. So upon the arrival of our brother Sudanese, the clinic has become over congested because of the big population. The school also is also congested because the classes available, they are not enough for the classes. We also send our request to our host here, the government, to provide us with some more shelters. The previous shelters, they are already were damaged, so we need shelters to be renewed. We also request that this clinic has to be upgraded from PHCC unit to maybe a hospital because of the population. We also requested that the ration card has to be increased because the food that is given to the refugees for individual is not enough, which is only 8,000 SSP. So we feel that all these services has to be increased for the refugees to improve their life. We also feel that education has to be upgraded. The basic education provided by UNICEF is not enough. So we need vocational training skills so that youth refugees can be able to acquire a skill to actually improve their life, also to work and increase to generate their income activities when they are trained on basic skills.
That's Adu Para Awiti, a leader of Ethiopian refugees at the Gorom refugee camp. He was speaking with my colleague John Tanza at the camp outside of Juba. From Juba, we move to Guinea-Bissau, where a member of the country's parliament says citizens are expressing frustration with President Umaro Sissoko Embalo's decision to dissolve the legislature and the government. The president's decree follows what he said was an attempted coup to overthrow his administration. Last week, the capital, Bissau, witnessed the exchange of gunfire between two factions of the army. Local media report soldiers from the National Guard freed an opposition minister who was detained over graft charges. For reaction to the dissolution of parliament and government, VOA's Peter Clotty reached Nangala Mbana. He's a student from University Hills of Bow, the University Collins de Bow. Mbana starts by saying people do not understand why the president acted the way he did.
People, this kind of decision, they feel bad because they get it like one surprise. Because these things happen at the moments when the parliament, they continue the work is normal, everything is okay. And then the president call his members this moment, he have one meeting with them. Leaders, we hear this kind of communication of the president to dissolve the parliament. It's, that's why so the people feel they're feeling bad with this kind of decision. But is that what happened? What happened right now? No one can explain to give you some justify why the president take this kind of decision right now to put the parliament down at this moment.
You said that people are angry about the decision.
Yes, at the moment, to hear this kind of communication of the president, they feel like a surprise. They didn't expect if the president will do it today. And then it's happened. No way. If you see on the face of all of the people, on the rules, at the arm of the people, they are talking about that. You are getting this kind of feelings. They are not okay with this kind of decision of the president.
I also understand the government has also been shut down. What does it mean to the people?
Yes. Are the same. The government will go down together with the parliament. That's why I saw the people scared like this.
So the people are afraid?
No, it's not too afraid But just the people are thinking about the features. How president are going to try and then to care about these things and then to organize the next election according to the period. That will be possible or no? Let us know the things that people are going to talk and how to do it at this moment.
That was Nangna Mbane, student from University Hills of Bow, speaking with VOA's Peter Cloti. And that's all we have for you this Monday. Don't forget to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this broadcast, go to voaafrica.com/South Sudan. I am your host, Nabil Biagio in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Adris Regas, thanks for taking the time to be with us. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
For peace to reign, all people must share equally in the benefits of development. Indeed, building sustainable peace requires the harmonization of numerous issues, including economic development, quality of life, human rights and dignity, trust in government, and the rejection of violence as a means to an end. When all people in a country are not able to enjoy the benefits of development equally, or when they cannot exercise their fundamental human rights, the risk of violent conflict increases, said United States Representative to the United Nations, Linda Thomas Greenfield. Proactivity is necessary because we have seen how difficult it is to take action after conflict has already broken out. For instance, global food insecurity. We know that conflict is the number one cause of hunger, but we also know that hunger is a driving force of conflict. It is our job to disrupt that cycle.
In 2022, the United States was proud to provide over half of World Food Program's budget. But more than just responding to current famines, we need to work collaboratively to prevent future ones. Whether it's helping develop climate-smart crops and agricultural practices, or helping family farmers secure equal access to land, knowledge, and financial support.
According to UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, developing countries are up against a perfect storm of crises, including enormous debts, constraints on government finances, and ability to choose where to allocate funds, and soaring inflation. As the world's major economies mobilize financing for development, it is imperative that we prevent rather than contribute to unsustainable debt and even debt distress, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield.
The United States has been working with a broad coalition to evolve the multilateral development banks and to expand by hundreds of billions of dollars the availability of safe, sustainable financing, especially for the poorest countries.
We need to identify instability, places where a lack of development and a lack of fundamental freedoms heightens the risk of conflict, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield. As we mark the 75th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, we must make sure that sustainable development is grounded in the principles of this foundational document. one we are all a party to and that we must work to make reality for every single person so that we can finally realize the vision of a world without conflict. Our children and our grandchildren's future depend on this.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.